This is GM Authority Weekly, episode 69, recorded on July 27th, 2011. Hips don't lie. GM Authority Weekly is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk for the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more. Visit GMAuthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Weekly in the iTunes Store. Welcome to GM Authority, the show that covers the GM news from the week gone by. And boy, was there a lot of it. We have, of course, the regular panel of the GM Authority Weekly co-hosts with us this week, starting with the man, Manoli Katakis, editor-in-chief of GM Authority. Good evening, Manoli. How's it going?
Good evening. Well, I have to say I'm glad this heat wave in Detroit is over, because now I can finally go outside without melting.
Really?
Yes, really.
How hot did it get?
It was in triple digits for about 4 days. And, I mean, that's different than triple digits in, like, a dry area like California. Like, it gets really humid in Michigan in the summer, and it's just, it's not comfortable.
Wow. Not good at all. Nope. But glad it's better. We also have Hilton Jorson of GM Authority Opinion Desk fame. How's your summer going, Hilton?
Good. Well, you know, I just listen to everybody in Michigan, see how their weather is 2 or 3 days before, and then basically I end up getting it. So, you know, when I saw the heat wave, all my Michigan buddies were updating their Facebook pages saying how, you know, extremely hot they were, then I knew I was going to get it. And sure enough, last week it was hell. So, the same sort of humid sort of weather that they do, and you just gotta grin and bear it, drink lots of water, and get your AC blasting in the Camaro, and everything's good.
There you go. The Camaro is, I think, the best way to go about it. Not the AC in the house, but the AC in the Camaro. Yeah. Before we get started with the show, I'd like to remind everyone that you can call us, and the phone number to do so is 313-355-3GMA. That's 313-355-3462. You can also write into us. podcast@gmauthority.com is the email address to type into your two box to do that. And you can, of course, tweet us and find us on Facebook at GM Authority or facebook.com/GM Authority, all one word. And just give us your feedback on the show. If you have any questions for us, if you'd like us to address any questions that you have about any of the vehicles we speak of, any of the topics that we discuss today, you can do so by reaching us on any one of those mediums. So let's start this show as we normally do with the GM Authority Garage. Manoli, 2012 Buick LaCrosse E-Assist. You had the pleasure of driving it a little bit, kind of like a first drive. What do you think?
Well, I had maybe a grand total of 20 minutes of seat time in that car driving it, and it didn't even take that long to know that we have got a huge improvement coming on the way. This thing, it's got a new transmission, which if anyone who's driven the naturally aspirated 2.4 liter LaCrosse with the old 6-speed, well, you'll realize that the transmission likes to surge. It's kind of clunky. It's unrefined, and it really kind of kills the comfortable driving experience that the LaCrosse is trying to aim for. This one, though, is just it's much more refined, much more smooth, and the LaCrosse is its E-Assist powertrain. I mean, it's got fuel economy numbers that just hit everyone else out, like right out of the ballpark. It's not a full hybrid. It's a mild hybrid, which means that at no point does the battery the batteries power the car forward. They just simply assist the engine, and the lithium ion batteries are good for an extra 15 horsepower of kind of like slack that it gives the car, and it helps out a lot. This car is really like It's tuned for fuel efficiency more than just with the batteries. It has an auto stop feature, which means you come to a stoplight or a red light or whatever, or even a stop sign, and the car comes to a complete stop and it shuts off. And it tells you that it shuts off by having this little, I guess you could, like this auto stop indicator on the tachometer. And as soon as I lift my foot off the brake, the car immediately fires back up. Like there's really no delay, and I can just carry about my way, you know, just as I was before. Now that helps save fuel economy, and it's also got aerodynamic grill shutters,
like on the Cruze Eco,
like the Cruze Eco, and underbody paneling, etc., like that. It's very good, and it's got 455 miles combined driving miles, and I think 550 highway miles, and this is with a fuel tank that is just under 16 gallons.
Wow.
That's very good. Very, very good. And it's going to start at $29,960, so basically it's going to be a $30,000 car, but that's $4,000 over the it's $4,000 under the Lincoln MKZ hybrid.
Right. But that the MKZ is a full hybrid, and it actually gets better fuel economy than this does.
Especially in the city highway mileage department. I mean, they're about 3 or 4 miles per gallon apart. You're looking at, I think, 36 miles per gallon highway in the La Crosse eAssist, whereas the Lincoln MKZ hybrid gets 41. However, the La Crosse is a bigger car.
Right. Bigger by about 7 inches, 8 inches or so. Longer.
Yeah, it's a full segment larger. This car also had the Buick IntelliLink system, which is essentially MyLink, just a different name.
So nobody has really played with this except for you in this first drive. What do you think?
Well, when I initially saw it, and I also got another look at this system when I had a look at the 2013 Malibu, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I was impressed. I thought the layout was really, really user friendly. You have that. You just have that center menu, and there's just, you know, just a few like little icons, little buttons. Then there's the AF or the AM radio, FM radio, XM radio, and each one has its own like little selection. Pandora, or not just Pandora, but the internet
Stitcher,
radio by itself.
XM.
Yeah, you press the internet radio button, and you can choose between Stitcher or Pandora. There's a phone button as well. Then there's a USB media button, which is basically like for iPods and stuff. The CD, it's really, really user-friendly, really intuitive, and really pleasant to look at, because when you select a music station, for instance, on XM radio, depending on the genre of music or whatever, like this, if it's a, or even if it's like a sports or news radio, the background changes. So for instance, if we're listening to the MLB radio and we want to listen to some baseball, it has like a high definition photo of a close up of a baseball and a catcher's mitt. And the same thing, like if I'm listening to
I wanted it to have like a picture of Barry Bonds.
That'll be on the ESPN Scandal radio.
What's the background picture when you listen to Howard Stern?
The guest of the day.
I didn't check out the Howard Stern radio, but I did see a couple of news channels, and they all kind of had the same layout, and it was basically just like a map of the world in the background. If you're listening to say like a rock station like XM Classic Vinyl, it's just a close up of like a guy playing the guitar. It's really cool. And
Neat. That's really neat, you know. And go ahead.
And of course, like it's pretty much all voice activated. Like you can you press the button and it says please say a command, and then you say play FM radio 88.7, or you can even go play XM radio, and you don't even have to say the station. You can just say play XM radio Alt Nation, and it'll go to that channel.
Can you dial or can you command it to play a specific artist or a specific song on your iPhone or on your iPod?
I believe so.
Because that's the major feature that, for example, Sync promotes.
Yes, you can. Okay. You say like whatever, play artist.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah, Lady Gaga, and it'll. Oh, you got it. I think you have to be selected on your. I think it has to be on your USB.
Right, of course.
Like selection.
Sure. Yeah. That's fine. As long as you're already there, that's cool. Mm-hmm.
However, you can't voice. I don't think you can voice activate internet radio stuff.
No, and there is really no way to do that yet.
No.
Even Sync doesn't do that, and I mean, I think they're getting there, but it's still a few years out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing about the LaCrosse, I thought it was a lot quieter than the outgoing model, the outgoing base model. You're also gonna ditch the hubcaps. You're gonna get alloys across the board, which is, I mean, it's great.
Right.
You're still gonna get cloth seats though, unless you option up. But
so that's interesting. So this is 29,960. Let's just round it out 30, right?
Right.
This is what, about 25, 26, about $3,000 higher than the 2011 LaCrosse with the 2.4. And we have to remember that for the 2012 model year, the 2.4 naturally aspirated model is going away, right?
Yeah, it's because you can only get the 2.4 from pretty much going forward with e-assist.
With e-assist. So it's either, you know, the 3.6 V6, the LFX for the 2012 model year, or...
Right. However...
Or, oh, yep, however.
However, you can only, like, the base, like, the most basic model is only available with the e-assist. You go one option up, and that's where it'll split without, you know, sacrificing price.
It will split, split how?
Like you can choose between e-assist or the 3.6.
Okay, right. But the 2.4 by itself is out of the equation.
Yeah, the 2.4 by itself is out of the equation. So is the old transmission. Again, so basically, you're looking at an all new drivetrain here, and it's much more refined. And you also get a lot of technology in here. You can even get a heads up display on the LaCrosse, which is, I mean, it's good for. I think all cars should get a heads up display, especially even cars like the CTS-V, which I don't think does.
No, it doesn't. But the Camaro does.
Yeah, exactly. The Camaro does, which is great, especially when you're going, you know.
we don't condone that kind of behavior on public roads, however.
Oh, who said anything about public roads?
So how is the 2.4 with respect to, you know, torque and grunt? Does it feel like a dog? Does the car go, get up and go? You know,
well, I mean, it's not athletic, but it doesn't feel bogged down this time around.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've done a lot better of a job of trying to calibrate the power to bring it.
But then again, I think if you really want power in the LaCrosse, you're going to get the 3.6.
You're going to get the 3.6. I mean, people, and I guarantee you most people aren't going to buy this car for a sense of
speed or...
Yeah, or you like an exuberating driving experience.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's the same reason why people buy, you know, the ES. You know, the ES has plenty of pick up and go. I think it's 0 to 60 in under 7 seconds, like 6.4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they didn't give us, like, the official, you know, acceleration times.
Right.
I don't think those are out yet. And again, like, this car is tuned more to optimize fuel economy than performance. Because, like, and along with, you know, the aerodynamics and, you know, the e-assist, you've got regenerative braking. You know, like I said, you have auto stop. And you have a fuel cutoff feature. Basically, if you're coasting at any time, the fuel feed shuts off.
Okay.
And basically, you get almost no fuel feeding to the engine.
Okay. Well, you know, just if we look at the overall and probably the overarching movement here is, you know, as more and more vehicles get, you know, electric assist in some way, whether it's, you know, a full-on hybrid, whether it's something like the Volt, or whether it's something like this e-assist in the LaCrosse, which is basically a mild hybrid with the BAS.
Yeah, it's just system. A BAS, really. I mean, with some extras.
Right.
Course.
You know, we kind of see this, and I've been noticing this over the last few months, we kind of see a changing of the way the dash, or at least the gauges, you know, appear. You have, obviously, the speedometer, you're always going to have that.
Are you talking about that little eco?
Yeah, there's this auto-stop gauge, and then there's the, on the e-assist.
Well, I mean, for the auto-stop, you're not, like, for most hybrids, I don't think that the car doesn't tell you, doesn't have a subtle auto stop thing on the tachometer. Instead, it'll beep at you, or it'll shine a light at you, or whatever. But this thing, I mean, you just see the needle just drop.
Yep.
And and like it just suddenly drops and you just kind of see it, it's like, oh, it's an auto stop.
Right.
And just below it, it says that the car is off. So you know that the car is like, you know, you if you ever get confused, you look at the tachometer to see if the car is off or if it's an auto stop.
Yeah.
And basically you shouldn't get confused because your foot's still going to be on the brake.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the Ford's implementation of kind of their green dashboard. I think it's called it's the one with the leaves. I think it's
kind of, I think it's so stupid. And you know what, going forward,
you think it's stupid?
I think it's with the leaves. It's like, come on, it's so gimmicky. It's so gimmicky.
Oh, but it trains you. That's the cool thing about it is it actually trains you to drive in a better, in a more fuel efficient fashion.
Yeah, this is true.
But then this doesn't give you that, the Buick, the LaCrosse E-Assist.
Well, it doesn't give you the stupid leaves. It just gives you like the little gauge, and you just try to keep the needle in the center.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really train you, you know, give you, or, you know, so many people I see driving Prius, you know, Priuses around here, and they like floor it off the light, you know, just right away. And I'm like, well, what's the point of driving a Prius if you're going to do that?
Because they're driving a Prius to drive a Prius, Alex. Don't you get it? Okay, wrapping this up, you're pretty much, you know, to go over fuel economy. I was 25 in the city, 36 in the highway, 29 combined, built in Fairfax, Kansas. Oh, you also get all new Michelin Green X tires, which are basically going to be exclusive to the LaCrosse E-Assist when it comes out, and until I think, of course, the Regal comes out with E-Assist, which is basically going to be the same powertrain. And, there you have it.
There you have it.
Look for it in the fall.
Look for it in your closest Buick GMC and possibly Chevy/Cadillac dealership, which there are quite a few of which are combined now. I think.
Hold on.
Yep.
We want to keep moving forward. I just want to keep talking about this. I'm sorry. IntelliLink will not launch with the LaCrosse E-Assist.
But it's going to launch with the 3.6?
No, it will not. It's going to be a rolling update.
Okay, so not initially for the 2012 model year, but sometime down the road.
It's going to. I think by the time the Buick Verona launches, which is what we're expecting IntelliLink to launch in,
right?
It's going to replace all the base, or I don't even think base, but it's going to replace the outgoing infotainment systems in the LaCrosse and I think in the Regal.
Okay, yeah. But will the guys who buy this new E-Assist LaCrosse in August, for example, be able to get the update?
Nope. It's a totally different system. Totally different hardware. You know, it's a color touch screen, whereas the standard one is a monochrome.
It's definitely a bummer. And
just wait. I mean.
Yeah, just wait. Just wait a little bit.
That's what I'd do. I would wait.
Unless you really don't want it. I mean,
unless you're coming out of a lease and you can't wait. And you can't wait. Or you really don't want it and you really don't care. You know, like I'd say, I don't know how many people out there who buy the LaCrosse, how many of them care about this, but I can tell you this much. I think that the people who buy the Lexus ES don't really care if there's a USB port, a tape deck, or maybe even an 8-track player in there. So, you know. It's nice to have it. It'll be interesting to see how many people opt for it. So let's talk about something that's on a similar note to the IntelliLink system in the LaCrosse. Manny, you had the chance yesterday to crawl around and, for lack of a better word, have your way with the 2013 Chevy Malibu, in the interior of it, right?
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to drive it, but General Motors had an event just yesterday. Today's Wednesday. We did it on Tuesday. Okay. That basically invited, you know, the media to check out the interior of the 2013 Malibu, and they basically grouped us up into, you know, different stations and stuff, and we just kind of rotated in and out like every, I don't know, 15-20 minutes or so, and we really got a look at what went into the development of the 2013 Malibu, and like in all honesty, it makes your head spin if you're not ready for it. Like, just in terms of sound engineering, acoustics, you know, noise dampening, the colors, the design, I mean, it's just, you can go on and on and on about it. And it really, like, it sheds light. It's like, I can't believe that these guys actually get all this done in, like, whatever, 3-4 years.
Yeah, it's a monumental effort.
Yeah, it really is. It's a big deal.
A lot of people just kind of take it for granted, and they say, well, you know, it's just slap some colors together and you got a car, and you got a car, a vehicle interior. But it's a much more involved process than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and we started, I was in the yellow group. Yeah, I don't know how many different other color groups there were, but I was in the yellow group, and we went to go see how NVH and acoustics engineering played a role into the development of the 2013 Malibu. And I guess what they're currently saying about – I guess there was a statement from someone out there somewhere that said that the Malibu is as quiet as the current Infiniti G35. Now, whether or not that's really a quiet car, it's nice to know in Chevy's mind that it's as quiet as a car that's, you know, $20,000 more expensive.
Or more.
Basically, they measured thousands of different, you know, things in the cabin or around the cabin and engaged the sound, like, you know, anything from engine noise to tire noise to even like sitting in a seat and pushing a button. It all got recorded and all kind of got put into this device called an Achenhead, and it's this German developed mannequin looking thing that replicates human hearing, mm-hmm. and then records the sound on a database. And the best part about it is that it even records where the sound is coming from. Like, if it's coming from, like, you know, the, you know, on your left, on the bottom, or up top to the right, or whatever. And it replicates human hearing and restores them and records in a database. And that's good for the development team, because what I'm told is that human acoustic hearing is no greater than 10, or the memory of human acoustic hearing is no greater than 10 seconds. And by that, I don't mean that you can't remember what something sounds like. It's where the sound is coming from.
Okay.
And so they recorded all in the Achenhead, and then they had us put on like these headphones, which these things looked like Stone Age archaic. I'm not like,
that's,
you know,
because needed to be, I think, sound isolating, right? Or noise isolating.
Well, yeah, they were noise isolating, but these green things, they look like you could even, like, they look like walkie talkies from, like, I don't know, the 80s, like, I'm you know, for the headphones. But these things, they were really cutting edge. It wasn't just like a mono. I don't even know how to describe it, but basically you could hear, like, it replicated, like, as if you were in a car, and you could hear, like, the windows going down behind you, in front of you. You could hear the doors closing on your left. You could hear the stereo, like, turning up, turning down. You could hear your hand pulling the shift column, everything. Like, it was really, really cool, and it gave us a good demonstration of what kind of refinement and quietness we can expect in the 2013 Malibu. And I gotta say, it's impressive. Really impressive. The wind noise is really dumbed down, as is tire noise. It's a really isolating experience.
Does that the Achenhead, does that record also the movements, like mechanical movements? Like, for example, if you get in, you pull the door to close it. Does that record that?
It records everything. If it makes a sound, the Achenhead registers.
Gotcha. You know what's interesting? The reason I ask is because on the current generation Malibu, and it's something that we talked about before.
Oh, when with the glue?
With the glue, yeah. When you pull a door, and for those of you who are just hearing about this, you know, if you leave your Malibu out, you know, and kind of don't drive it and don't use it for, I don't know, about 5-10 hours or so, especially if you leave it out under the sun, and you get back in, and you reach out to shut the door, especially in the driver's side, that door handle, like, it's that whole piece is glued on to the rest of the door, it seems like, and it's just it has this really nasty, like, glue separating sound that, you know, kind of diminishes the quality of the vehicle. But you know, from what it sounds like, they've thought it through this time around.
Definitely. I've also, you know, they have floor dampening, like floor damping material underneath the carpet. They have these windows in the front in the front driver and passenger side that basically they act like a double pane glass, and it kind of isolates the sound from the outside, the wind noise. The windshield is the same way. And you know, the Malibu, and they even tune the exhaust, you know, and basically whereas the Malibu LS and the LT going forward are going to be like, you know, a quieter exhaust, the LTZ will have a sportier note. You know, they did their best to isolate and block the engine noise, and there's just all these different, they have a big, they show us a big graphic of all these things that just help isolate the driver from noise. And I guess what a huge challenge was for them, and not just in terms of sound engineering and stuff, but just overall, was the suppliers, because this car is a global vehicle and it's going to launch and all over the world and being built in four different plants, you know, two in North America, one in Korea, one in China. They had a lot of hurdles to go through, especially in the Korean and China plants. For instance, 80% of all the parts that will be going into the Chinese spec Chevy Malibu needed to be localized.
Really?
So, yeah. Huh. So all the American supplier companies that got contracts to build parts for the Chevy Malibu here basically cannot ship them over to the plant in China.
Right. Yeah, that's something that the Chinese did really well. They you know, they restrict the amount of imported goods,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are from the industries that matter, that, you know, the heavy yep. industries.
But you know, if they didn't have a population of 1 billion people, most businesses would just turn their heads and walk away. But the fact that there's so much, you know, capital there, you know, and so demand. Much potential and demand, yeah. It's just like you can't say no.
Big market.
Huge. Well, obviously it's the biggest. there's different road surfaces in the world. Like for instance, in China, there's this setup. Called cross groove surfacing, and while it helps take rainwater off the roads, it really increases the road noise, and they had to do their best to try and basically dumb that road noise down in, you know, in China, and it's really, really ridiculous. And yeah, I could go on about that, but there was also, you know, the design. I guess they want to. There's going to be 10 color combinations in the interior, like total. And they were touting that, you know, they were influenced by different fashion items like purses and jackets and things like that when they designed the interior. And they have that ice blue lighting, you know. And basically, what the car we sat in, Alex, in New York,
right,
is essentially the same layout, and you know how it had like that, I don't even know what to call it, like that stripe, that thing, that
like on the seats,
or
on the near the dash,
yeah on the dash, I don't even know how to call it,
like above this, the glove box,
yeah, that
it's like a wraparound, yeah, somewhat of a wraparound design,
yeah, these accents, this accent, you know, basically that that's going to be it. There, you can't switch it out for, like, you know, a smoother, like, panel surface or anything. You're going right. to have that. But I guess what is cool about that wasn't shown in the auto show at New York, was that they're actually going to light that up with blue lighting. So it's going to kind of have, like, this light blue stripe going around when you're driving at night. And that's going to be pretty cool.
Well, that's neat. So it's kind of like Ford's ambient lighting.
Yeah, you're gonna have a lot of pretty much almost everything is gonna have like ambient lighting except for the footwells. Even the door handles are gonna have ambient lighting.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's also a blue ambient, like a blue light shining down onto like the shift column and where you can you'll store your cup hold by the cup holders and stuff where
your cigarettes.
Yeah, your cigarettes, your cell phone, and of course there's that little storage compartment where you're not supposed to store drugs, but you know everyone's going to. Yes.
Okay.
from the outgoing model, the new Malibu is going to have a 2.5 inch wider track, which leads to more head and more shoulder and hip room, because Americans are fat and they need to be accommodated for.
Right, but also it's also great way of putting it, by the way.
Right.
It's also, you know, wider track also provides greater stability. and better handling. It's a wider car.
Yes, it's going to be – well, hopefully, I mean, it has everything on paper to at least be a more athletic feel than the current one, which, I mean, the current Malibu isn't bad at all.
It's really not bad. Handling-wise, it's great. The 3.6 in the current one is awesome. You know, the 2.4, not so much, but, you know, it makes do. Yeah, I mean, it's I'm really looking forward to this car.
As am I. And the one thing that they're actually lacking in is, I guess they have a little bit less leg room. And I think, like they were saying, that if you were to stick a notebook out, you know, not long ways, but like, you know, horizontally and like kind of like push it against like a rear seat, like that's how much leg room you lose. So it's like maybe a half an inch. But they were touting more rear headroom, and as I think this was John Hahn, he said that there's gonna be more headroom in the rear. But as we were saying that, Mark Phelan was getting in the car and he bumped his head. So.
Yep, that's called a coinkydink.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, more headroom, but is it really enough? And you know, they were also saying that they were also giving a statistic that 70% of the people that sit in the back seat are not adults.
Right.
And even though that you can fit an adult back there, it's
how would they come up with that? I'm just curious. Like, do they spy on you when you're driving?
Yes.
Like, how do they know? No, seriously, how do they know? Do they do like a? I guess they could do a stat study and
stat. Well, of course, stat studies.
Yeah.
You're going to have, yeah, so 10 different seating options, and you're also going to have, I think 10-way speakers.
Yes, 10 speakers in the cabin, huh?
Yeah, 10 speakers, 10-way adjustable, driver's seat.
Okay.
Or actually, don't quote me on the speakers. I'm not really sure. It was like 8, 9, or 10. Whoever the engineer was, he was pretty much instructed to just show me the miling system, and he didn't really count out how many speakers there were in the cab.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, I'm sorry. I meant 10-way adjustable seats. And, I mean, they were comfortable. They felt comfortable. They were a lot more I thought they were a little bit more absorbing than the current model, thanks to them, like the seats are a little bit more bolstered this time around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, before they were kind of a little bit more open, but
yep.
Obviously what you were sitting in and checking out were the pre-production models, but the two, last year I had two Malibus in the GM Authority garage, you know, part of the GM fleet. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, both of them, the driver's seat squeaked every time I got in and every time I got out of the car. It, you know, just kind of went, you know, didn't really do it while I was driving, but just kind of squeaked. And hopefully that won't be a problem with the new Malibu.
Oh, well, I mean, nothing was squeaking when we were in there, even though they were just pre-production models.
Right. I think that this is much less of, you know, they really took their time with it, with the 2013 model. You know, it shows, you know, because they have all these engineers who are literally all they do is they're working on one component or one use case of a car. And that just shows how much quality you can have in a vehicle, which, you know, that's great.
Yes, it is. And again, like we had a look at the miling system and which is basically like we were talking about with the IntelliLink system, you know, 10 minutes ago. I was asking them questions about, like, you know, things going forward, like what's the kind of stuff they want to see in, like, maybe their Gen 2 miling system or whatever, and they want to do voice recognition for Pandora. They also
now, before we go on any further with that, I just want to make it clear that both Pandora and Stitcher, both the internet radio apps,
right,
they require a data connection via a tethered cell phone.
Yes, you do need a smartphone, and it's either, you know, pretty much going to be an Android, a BlackBerry, or an iPhone. And the iPhone, if you're going to use the iPhone, you need to have the white connector. Yeah, the USB connection cable.
That's until iOS 5.0, I think.
Right.
Which is due in a month, I think. Somewhere around there.
Well, if it's due in a month, then by the time that happens, you might not even need it because the Malibu's not due till January. And another thing about it is that there's no sat nav with the miling system.
Right. So that's kind of the way Ford does it. They they offer the Mi4 touch system, which basically is the infotainment system, and then they offer the navigation layer on top of it.
Yes.
And that's fine. I mean, I think that's good because it decreases the price, decreases the point of entry.
Yeah, but even at the same time, like, it's not even going to launch with sat-nav.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. At least that's the impression I got, unless, she understood me wrong or whatever. They were also thinking about something called a GM App Store.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. They were going to see if there's maybe a market for apps for basically to use while you're driving.
See, that would work. I can see where that would work, where they can, for example, the user can download some kind of a Twitter app that would integrate with the smartphone, of course, use a smartphone's connection, and then say, read you your tweets or read you your Facebook updates read you MLB, sports scores, whatever.
Right.
I can see that happening as long as I don't know how they would do it as far as all the brands are concerned, because then you'd have to have, again, like every brand would need to have its own app store.
Right. Or, I mean, yeah, I guess. Or you could just call the GM App Store, but that's right. Not really – that's too centralized.
That's not where they're going right now.
That's not where they're going
setup.
At all.
Yeah.
Right. They were also trying to figure out ways to maybe implement Wi-Fi.
Hill, that's your topic. That's like your favorite hot button topic, right?
Well, yeah. But who knows where they're going with that? I mean, I looked at the OnStar technology as the architecture and the platform as a way to deliver some of these potential apps. But I don't know how they're going to do it, so please.
Yeah, I don't think OnStar is going to play a role in that. I think this is going to be based on these MyLink infotainment units in the cars, and then OnStar is going to be that. We think we discussed this on the last show, but OnStar is going to be the overarching safety brand that will kind of unify all these products.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Is there anything else that we missed about the Malibu, the interior?
I mean,
you can go on and on probably about
this. Yeah, I could bore you for another hour.
Oh, that's not boring. Not at all. I love hearing about this stuff, as do our listeners, I think.
It's, I think they'd probably be more interested to know what I saw at Milford, but I don't think I can really talk about that, because that's where it was, actually.
We just love to tease.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about something else that is, or has been a tease, but is no more, and that, of course, is the Chevy Cruze diesel. So we've had rumors, we've had unofficial confirmation, I mean, USA Today,
right,
Edmunds, speculation left and right. Chevy has finally gone officially on record with an early confirmation that the Chevy Cruze diesel is coming to North America. Excuse me. The car basically, we expect it to perform better in the fuel economy department, especially on the highway. 50 miles per gallon on the highway, I think, isn't too extreme to expect.
Yeah, 50 on the highway. Some speculate that we might even see 40 mpg, not just on the highway, but combined.
Combined, huh?
Yeah, which, I mean, that is lofty.
It is.
That's ridiculous.
What really gets my heart going about this is not the fuel economy, however, but it's the torque number.
Yeah.
265 pound-feet of torque. That is how much torque is in the Holden Cruze that's sold in Australia, the diesel version, of course.
Yep.
That's a 2-liter diesel, 160 horsepower, 265 pound-feet of torque. Unfortunately, this car is not due to launch until 2013. That is calendar year 2013. Not model year, calendar year 2013.
Yep, which is kind of – I mean, that goes to show it's like – just how early of a confirmation this is.
What the heck, man?
Well, hey, it's not their fault. You had everyone already reporting on it, and they, they might as well just set the record straight.
Yeah, but why take so long?
I mean, maybe it's gonna have something to do with the refresh cruise.
Oh, like in 2014?
Yeah, or maybe it could happen sooner. Maybe we could have a refresh cruise or next gen crews coming calendar year 2013 with the diesel, the hatch, coupe. I don't know.
I think we're going to see a refresh, not a next gen. I think it's right. I think at that point they're still going to be kind of bedridden by the bankruptcy proceedings and the slowdown that's associated right. with that. But
it would be. I mean, by then, the crews will be about a 5-6 year old design.
Depends on where you look at. I guess North America will be 2011. It'll still be 3-4. Yep.
Yeah, still be fairly new as far as a product's life cycle is concerned. But globally, and especially if they want to launch the car. Or if they want the car to be kind of launching if they want to optimize the global launch, they're going to do with the Malibu, right. And like they're doing with the Aveo and the Sonic, where it's just kind of launching in Korea and Europe, and it's going to be launching later this fall. Like, hopefully they can do that with the Cruze, where all the major markets are already covered within months and not years.
Yeah. No, I'm just glad. I think this would be a great car, both in terms of, especially value, but, it's such a great sized vehicle, and just to get better gas mileage than it already gets now is just fantastic. But what I like, too, even more of that, is the bigger picture where General Motors has finally accepted that, it's okay to have a diesel vehicle, especially a passenger car in North America. So, in the past, this was like a no-no.
I think it still is a no-no in a lot of eyes. Like, a lot of people are still skeptical about diesels, especially the older crowd. Like, nowadays, like, we know that diesels aren't even kind of like they're more economical than pretty much gasoline engines. Tit for tat. But a lot of people, they don't see that. They think that it's just like, oh, if I'm buying a diesel, I'm buying a coal blowing, smog forming.
If they looked into the technology of a diesel today compared to not only technology but the fuel itself and the makeup of that fuel compared to even 20 years ago, it's a night and day difference. We've got direct injection now, even on the diesels. The engines are much, much quieter. They're much more reliable. The quality of the fuel is much better than before. Diesel was, it was, when it first came about, it was crap gas. It right. was,
It's no longer a dirty word. Let's just say that.
It isn't. And, they still, you've got to remember that anything produced today, regardless of what the gas is that the vehicle's using, has to go through, California emissions. And, that's some of the tightest, most stringent emissions in the world. So,
Doesn't mean they're the smartest. What I hate about, California has gotten, so influential in the automotive scene. It's like, whatever they deem fit as a future powertrain, basically the rest of the country is going to have to follow suit. Like, basically, it was California that influenced electric cars and hybrid cars, no one else. And because that they're so, because they wanted it so bad, is all the automakers are pretty much designing electric cars rather than it being like biofuel or biodiesel or hydrogen or whatever, because, we're going to have electric because we said so.
Yeah, well,
I'll tell you what.
Well, I think the biggest influence is just because of the size of them, and they do have a lot of clout in the
automotive
American
space?
Eyes.
Yeah.
Well, especially when it comes to smog and that sort of thing. I mean, they've been trying to fight it in general. It doesn't put aside the automotive aspect of it.
Right.
They've been trying to fight smog there for decades. So, I think they're now looked at as leaders in the world with, how to prevent smog and that sort of thing, and all the, the green lobbyists of the world, they're based out there. So, they do have influence, unfortunately. And, they are you know, 11% of the population. So
right, let's not forget the size of the market. You know, that's California, and as a state, is the most popular.
It is. You know. It is the most populated state in the country.
Well, not only that, but it's also the that's where the most cars are sold.
Right.
It's the most popular state for vehicle sales.
Right, and the other thing too is, you know, just beside the green aspect of vehicles, I mean, California is friggin' broke. So, you know, the rest of the population there are, you know, in the same boat. I mean, they are looking for, you know, automotive companies that are going to help them and their families get through this financial mess. I mean, gas is going to be, you know, priced a little higher out there. You know, they're going to be taxed for everything. We're charged for everything out there. You know, it's nice to have products that'll actually they can look at to help them, rather than something that's going to cost them more money. So, you know, and they're good at generating electricity. So, you know, they're going to have influence, and I think I hope that that this diesel cruise is going to be accepted just more easily by the younger population. I guess we always look at diesels as those trucks that drive by.
I think we think of diesels as like the Duramaxes and the Power Strokes of the world, but
even still, those are running very clean these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
And, you know, if everybody, you know, took a flight to Europe and looked around and see what, you know, just how popular diesels are in Europe, they'll quickly see that it's really about, you know, saving money more than anything else.
Well, I mean, you save money at the pump, kind of. I mean, you do have to pay for more expensive fuel here, and you have to pay a premium for the engine when you buy it. So it'll be a little while before your choice finally pays for itself.
Yeah. Well, let's not get stuck in a diesel, on the dieselness of the cruise.
On the diesel dilemma.
On the deezed dilemma, yeah. Let's talk about something that's really exciting, and that is the fact that Chevy has sold 2.35 million. Vehicles globally.
Why make billions when we can make
millions?
Millions?
Trillions?
Why make trillions when we can make billions?
Billions. Of course, this is all across the world, and it's best ever, right? This is in the first half of 2011, and I mean, what do you know? All around the world, 2.35 million vehicles. You know what's interesting is that most of the success here of this 2.35 million, most of it comes from the Chevy Cruze, which so far has sold nearly 800,000 copies around the world.
But there's also the Silverado. The presser just didn't want to mention it. But the Silverado is also doing quite well.
How well is that?
Well, I wouldn't say it's touching 800,000. Hold on, it's at 183,000 units so far for
right.
The year.
Other noteworthy models, of course, include the Spark, which has sold over 100,000 units through the first half of 2011. Of course, the Aveo, which has sold 150,000. The Aveo, huh?
You'd be surprised how popular it is outside of the United States.
It is popular. It's just such a
It is. It's an econo box. It's not. It's not a good car. It's wagon. Just. It's whatever. It's cheap, but the new one is nice.
Yeah, agreed. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the 2012 Cadillac SRX and what it will be priced at. We'll also talk about OnStar and, of course, some Opel stuff. But when we or before we do that, I'd like to remind everyone that besides this very podcast, we also have the GM Authority blog that we also like to call the GM Authority News Desk. And that, of course, is the place where you can get all of this news in much more detail and a whole lot more every single day, hour, minute of the week. So if you'd like to get your latest GM fix, GMAuthority.com is the place to do that. All right, let's talk about the 2012 SRX. What about it? We have obviously a new engine, right? The LFX, yep. Which in this application is going to be making 300 horsepower.
308.
308.
308 horsepower. Basically, it's starting, of course, at $36,060. So essentially, pretty much $36,000 plus $875 in destination. That's a bit of a jump from the $34,615 asking price of the outgoing 2011 model that is equipped with either the 3-liter LF1 V6, which I think comes with 265 horsepower, and then there's also the discontinued 2.8-liter turbocharged LP9 V6 engine, which is good for 300 horsepower. So basically, this thing beats it eclipses both engines in output, and we're expecting to have the same, if not better, fuel economy as the 3-liter LF1, because the 3.6, despite its horsepower and despite its larger displacement, is an incredibly efficient engine for a V6. When you look at it applied in cars like the Chevy Camaro, for instance, where I think it was the LT1 or LT2, Alex, I can't remember, but basically you can get 30 miles per gallon on it.
I think it's 1LS or something like that.
Oh yeah, the 1LS or 1L. Yeah. Anyway, you're breaking 30, and This is in a front wheel drive setup. I'm not saying that it's lighter than the Camaro. The Camaro's already fat, this thing is expected to be heavier. But anywhere in the ballpark between 26 and 30 miles per gallon would be my estimate.
Hey Manoli, speaking of the Camaro, did you know that fat bottom girls make the rock and roll go round? I'm sorry, I just had to get that in there because I was driving a 2SS this week, or a 1SS this weekend, and that song came on, and I couldn't help but notice the resemblance.
But it's true, though. It's true. Well, she's not just fat bottom, she's fat everything.
Yes, which I wouldn't say she's fat, she's just a little...
We'll say she's broad.
Broad.
So she's... Guys, yes.
Burly?
Any good designer of a good sports car, I don't care where it's made, knows the importance of beautiful hips on a vehicle.
Hips don't lie.
I can't even put my arms around those hips, though, Hilton.
Well, you don't have to.
She'll put her arms around you, Manoli.
Well, no, I mean, it's about it's about being inside, between those hips.
Oh yeah, I gotta be in those.
That's right.
Oh man, we're going down that path, huh?
The Chevy Camaro wants you.
I'm just talking about a Camaro or even a Corvette for that matter. They've got wide hips.
Yep.
I think we found the title for the show.
Wide
even
hips.
When you got if you want to look at the Germans with the Porsche. Porsches have wide hips.
Yeah, but they're so ugly, it's not even funny.
Yeah, and Porsche's a bitch.
Yeah, but you know what? When you're looking at the back of the vehicle, you don't look at the face. It doesn't matter if it's ugly. It's the back part of the vehicle, if it's got beautiful hips.
So you want me to drive the Porsche in the dark? What you're saying?
No, I want you to approach the Porsche from behind. Admire the beautiful hips.
In the dark.
And then you get inside and drive it.
Oh man, let's pull ourselves out of the rat hole that we're in. Let's talk about OnStar, huh?
I thought we were supposed to talk about cars.
What?
We're talking about cars.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Now you want to talk about OnStar?
Okay. Well, car related, right? I mean,
yeah.
You kind of live from one of the call centers, probably what, like half an hour away, right?
Right.
So, that's car related. Come on. You got to give OnStar some love. I mean, I understand how you'd be upset because your 2010 Camaro isn't compatible with the MyLink app, which sucks. But
they won't exactly retro my car.
Yeah, well, I know what I found out was, I can't believe I'm saying this. I had a buddy, no, just someone I know of, okay, who went up to a 2011 and ripped the OnStar hardware out of the 2011 and put in his 2010, and he's all set.
Get out of here.
But you never, again, you never heard that from me. So he is a
No, but
mechanic.
you know what? I mean,
He knows
aside
what
from
he's doing.
that.
He knew what he was doing, and it took him like a few weeks to do that, but he did it.
Yeah, but I mean, aside from that, if somebody, you find a wrecked 2011 or even 2012,
Right.
that's good information for people with 2010s
Right.
because you can go to the scrapyard and say, I'll give you $20 for this weird looking box.
Right.
If it still plugs in,
Well,
the harnesses.
it's like two components, and it's actually the components look exactly the same,
Yeah.
but obviously it's what's in them that counts.
Right.
But then there's a couple of other, like, the connectors are different, so he had to create different
Okay.
connectors, and
Well,
like,
it's going back to a show we did a while back where we said, it's too bad that General Motors wouldn't, package a kit over the counter
yeah, you know what,
for 2010 per Camaro owners just to go in and buy it,
right.
and that would include the right connectors and just a plug and play sort of deal.
Yeah.
We'll pay for it, but offer it.
Oh. Speaking of connectors and stuff, if there's an update for the MyLink or IntelliLink system, you download it onto a flash stick and then you plug it into the car.
There we go.
And there you
Finally, finally. See, this is the issue with the vehicles that are not using the MyLink or IntelliLink or whatever Cadillac's version is going to end up being called. Like
I
my
hope I hope
cruise,
I hope they call it Caddy Link.
Caddy Link, Caddyshack. My cruise has that pause play button right in the middle, that you think would be, used for pausing things and playing things.
Right.
Which doesn't
Wrong.
work with my iPhone, like on music or podcasts or Android devices for that matter. So, like with a USB, if it were upgradable with a USB stick, I'd be able to upgrade it, but it's not. So, thank you very
No,
much for that.
I'm sorry, I forget which car company. I think it's a European company. However, they basically had the whole car hooked up to the USB line so that if you needed an update to anything, you'd go to the dealership and they'll load up your USB and then you throw it in your USB port and the car will automatically read what that update is for and update the corresponding component.
Oh, so they kind of did away with that funky mechanics only connector on the bottom of the.
Well, they probably still need it for the mechanic to read problems and stuff. But
Well,
I thought that was.
at this point, your car just becomes like another USB accessory. Like you carry instead of carrying, you got your joystick and your steering wheel that you carry around to play games on your computer. You got your mouse that you plug in via USB. Now you just instead of bringing your computer to the car, you just bring your car to the computer.
Oh, basically. Well, your car is a computer,
Exactly.
really. So, if they were, all these cars with, GPS systems, nav systems, you got a nice display there to show mechanics, everything that's wrong with certain systems. So, if they had some kind of combination where they can, do some sort of code and it automatically links that screen up to whichever modular you want or module you want it to look at, that'd be pretty cool for the mechanics wise. And then yeah, you would need to that little plug-in.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I just as a side story, I went out to the local Volvo dealer to get Ariana's car fixed here, or for a 60,000 mile checkup. And I asked them just to see what they check for. I asked them to print out the actual diagnostics, and it was something like 14 pages of line by line by line by line, computer generated stuff that was like, clear, yes, no, clear, yes, no. It's just the amount of stuff that goes into these checkups is it's really incredible. It'll be kind of cool to see what's on there. But I guess there is somewhat of a danger to making that available, just to every Joe Schmo out there who thinks it's a good idea to tweak their ECU on a Saturday night, But how do we get on this? Oh yes, we were talking about MyLink, which is from July, was it like 15th or something? July 15th forward. OnStar MyLink, the app, is now called OnStar Remote Link. So this has, we've been speculating about this for the last few months. Finally, the new name is here. This obviously comes as a way to reduce confusion between the MyLink, the Chevy MyLink, and IntelliLink systems in Chevy, as well as Buick and GMC vehicles, respectively. So, of course, here's a quote from the OnStar press release: "To help improve customer understanding of the mobile app and infotainment offerings across Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac, OnStar is renaming the OnStar MyLink mobile app OnStar Remote Link." So there you go. Not MyLink, it's Remote Link now. I like the name. I actually like it.
Yeah, it's more descriptive.
Now I wonder what's going to happen with OnStar Family Link.
Well, we will find out August 1st, won't we?
Yes, we will. That's Monday, is it
Monday.
not?
Monday with Linda Marshall. I don't know if we were supposed to talk about that, but nevertheless, we just did, so. Not like anybody listens or anything.
Bonus content for those
Bonus
of you who
content
listen or
for the podcast listeners. Let's talk about something that's, well, at least doesn't have a bonus in my book, and that's the Opel Combo, this next generation compact van that is, I mean,
What, you
for
mean in a
all it,
Fiat? It's a Fiat Doblò.
yes, but for all intents and purposes, this one got smacked around with the ugly stick, and,
That's because Fiats are ugly.
jeez, this thing is just terrible. I mean, this
Yeah,
is just really
it doesn't even
bad.
look like an Opel. Like the outgoing combo was, I mean, so much better looking than this thing.
At
But
least it looked like a utility van.
yeah, but again, it's like looks are a minor chip, on the table for like for the segment. You really, it's all about utility mostly.
I
So.
agree. I agree. But and we I think we discussed this previously. But the thing here is, like, you look at something. This is, by the way, for those of our listeners who have not yet seen pictures of this thing, just pull it up. Just search Opel Combo on GMAuthority.com. You'll see the ugliness of it right in front of you there, front and center. But this is pretty much a direct competitor to the Opel Transit and Opel Transit Connect.
You mean Ford Transit?
What are, oh, I said Opel. God.
Yes, you
Yes,
did.
Ford Transit and Ford Transit Connect. Thank you for catching that. Otherwise, it would
Yes.
not have made any sense whatsoever.
No.
But the interesting thing about the Transit is that it actually looks professional. So if I'm like a construction worker, if I'm a bread delivery man, or I deliver trinkets
Well,
for poor
it looks
people.
professional. It's not like it has like stupid graffiti on
No,
the
it does
side
have
or
stupid. It just looks like you're a
It just has a
clown.
stupid face.
It listen, when you roll up to a construction site and you're not driving a truck, people look at you funny. One. But then again, if you drive a Transit Connect, fine, you get better fuel economy, it makes sense. If you pull up to a construction site with one of these, people will think you're a clown and you just came back from the circus. Does not exude the professional feeling whatsoever. So I
You're
think
just saying that 'cause you really don't like the way it looks.
I really don't like the way it looks. You're absolutely correct.
Well, I think if, a clown was driving it, I think it would be a perfect match.
Yeah, that's an insult to clowns everywhere, Alex.
I'm not trying to insult them.
You're insulting the clown industry. What if they roll
You
up? What if
know,
like 50 of them are in this like clown car thing and they show up at a clown rehearsal?
well, then they look like they fit. They
Well,
fit the
you
image.
just see these guys who go to these kids' birthday parties and they're all dressed up as in a clown suit and their vehicle is full of, balloons and stuff.
Hey,
Well,
are you talking about my weekend job?
Yeah,
I knew that's what you did.
yeah.
I knew you don't get anything done.
Well, most guys are doing it in, you see them in the old, Pontiac Sunfires and the Chevrolet Cavaliers, but this product is perfect for them.
Too bad it's not
I
going to
think
be in the
it.
States.
Yeah, well, I think it would suit them really well.
But you know what
Did you
though?
not see? Did you not see Bozo the Clown getting out of it?
But I think there's a bigger question here than looks, guys. And one of them is, why did Opel not develop its own van? Why is it
Because
relying?
Opel's broke. GM Europe is they're restructuring right now. So if, I mean, if you have to outsource at least one thing to Fiat, when, I mean, it's built in Turkey. I mean.
Well, ugh. so is the Transit Connect.
Yeah. But yeah, I really, it's not like they're outsourcing their insignia to, you know, Fiat or right. anything like
right.
that.
Right. This just, is much less of a personal product.
Yeah. This. I mean.
Surprised Daewoo doesn't have something they could use.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really kind of irked that a vehicle like this from General Motors is not in the American market yet. Because, like, the Transit Connect, it took off the moment that it hit shores. You know what I mean? But, like, I don't know if the demand of that thing has been filled yet. I haven't checked the recent stats and numbers on it. But, really, like, small business – this caters directly to small businesses.
The Transit Connect you're talking about?
Yes.
It hasn't been a big seller yet because of the price.
Is it too expensive?
Yeah. It's about $2,000-$3,000 more expensive. That's what I hear from on the dealer side, and that's what I hear on basically on the retail channels.
They're selling pretty good here.
In Canada?
Yeah.
Huh.
And I don't know. I think it has to do with, you know, how much you can get into that vehicle,
yeah.
considering
yeah,
the size.
You can,
of it.
Yeah, you can fit a lot. And
can
you
fit
know,
a lot of clowns in there.
And relative to a full-size van,
yeah.
it gets outstanding fuel economy. Okay, and like, I mean, how many like unless you're say, unless you like install like you know pipes and houses or whatever like you know unless you like are really like heavy duty like contractor, you really don't need a full size van or a truck. Like this thing will be perfect for you and your small business and your fleet.
Yeah, I just think like you know messenger companies, caterers.
Yeah, well, look at the HHR panel van.
Yeah.
Or not even panel, but the panel HHR. Like that's the only thing that comes close to fulfilling the needs of say your typical Transit Connect buyer from General Motors, and that car is being discontinued. So what now?
Well,
would the Orlando be able to do it if they brought it in?
I think so. I think they could easily turn it into a panel, you know, type
yeah.
setup. And here's a small or a little known fact that or about the Ford Transit Connect. Do you guys know that it actually gets imported from Turkey as a passenger vehicle with rear windows, rear seat belts, and rear seats?
Does it get converted by a third party, or does Ford
it gets
converted?
I don't know by who. I think it is a third party. It's like WWL. It's called, but they do this to circumvent the 25% tax on imported light trucks.
Very interesting.
So they import it as a passenger van, gut it, or at least the back part of it.
Uh-huh.
They import it to Baltimore, somewhere around there, I think.
Wow.
And then just replace it. And the remove parts, they actually had a whole piece on this the other day that we're writing up for our sister site, Ford Authority. But they remove, like the parts they remove, they end up recycling, and basically they, you know, they take care of the loophole in the customs process.
Those sneaky Ford people.
The blue
yeah.
oval.
Sneaky.
GM would never do that.
Yeah, a business exploiting a loophole? Get out.
Yeah.
No way.
They do what?
But in other news, for all our listeners, you know, who made a great fort and up in the tree for their kids, you will get a great deal on some seats for that fort.
The files are in the computer.
Ford. Yeah, contact
They're
Ford
in the computer?
Get them for next to nothing.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know what they do with them when they say they recycle them. I'm still trying to find that out, but
they recycle them. You know where they go to?
Mm.
To Turkey.
Oh. To get shipped back again, right?
Exactly.
Yes. All right. Got it. Yeah, I think the actual I don't know. We'll talk about that later. But let's talk about something that we'll wrap the show up with. This is something that I've been waiting to talk about this whole day, Manoli. The Bumblebee
yes.
Edition Cruise.
Oh, boy.
Okay, first question. Let's actually, before we even get to the questions, this is, it looks like a Chinese market only cruise
yep.
for now. Maybe
yep.
a Korean domestic market cruise as well. Hasn't been confirmed yet. So this is a limited edition cruise called literally the Bumblebee Edition.
Yep.
That's
just
built,
like the Camaro. Bumble.
Yep.
Yep.
Built to commemorate the, you know, the film.
The Transformers.
Films, whatever. I don't watch those things. I just watch them with the Camaro and in the Top Kick.
You gotta watch Transformers 3. It's the best one.
Is this the latest one?
Yeah, it's a kick-ass movie. Like, just sit there and just watch this. Just enjoy this.
Is it really a kick-ass movie, or is it just a kick-ass movie with cool effects?
Or is it a lousy movie
with cool effects?
I mean, it's we'll say that the plot line is thin, but just sit back and watch the CGI.
Okay, all right. So
and the hips.
Oh, and the hips too. Yeah. But you know the hips that were in the second one are no longer in the third one. So
those hips don't lie.
No, they don't.
Yeah, but you know the hips that were in the second one, you won't remember those hips in the second one after you've seen the third one.
All right.
That's a true story, actually.
Yeah.
I would know because I haven't seen it, but now I have to take your word for it.
Yes.
So back to the cruise Bumblebee edition. It's got some.
Well, I just got to let you know something.
What?
That
hips don't lie.
You know, when. No.
Are you a clown on the weekends?
Will you stop telling the public my secret, please? Thank you.
Can I do one more?
No.
Okay.
No. And I'll get that dress back to you next week. So, when the first Transformer Edition Camaro came out 2 years ago, mm-hmm. China actually, a few people in China actually came out with they bumblebeed. Was it a cruise? Did they have a cruise there 2 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah, they had done it in the first for the first version, and you know I'll try and get you those pictures, but it was pretty strange. And now they're doing it again. So the first time it was a pretty popular edition. With the Chinese, and I guess they're gonna do it with the cruise.
So this thing has some, let's just call them unique graphics.
It's got gimmicks.
Autobot badging all around the the shell, and what else? Oh yes, the most important part. How can we forget? 1.6 liter turbocharged Ecotec engine that makes 182 horsepower, which is, of course, 44 horsepower more than what we see today in the 1.4 liter turbo Ecotec powered cruise in the United States and all over North America. So, a lot more powerful, or at least 44 more horsepower, which is a lot in a car the size and dimensions of the cruise. You know, we're still trying to get the official confirmation from GM that this is in fact a GM vehicle rather than some, you know, one-off. But
right.
1.6 liters. This is, you know, this is major, a big update, I'd say, to the current 1.4 liter Ecotec. So this is by no means an SS. This is by no means a Z spec. It's by no means even coming to North America, as far as we know. Or is even real, you know.
It but just makes us jealous.
It really makes me jealous, having just bought a 1.4 liter powered one in automatic, not knowing right. that the 2012s will be available in stick.
Yeah, this 182 horsepower, like 1.6 turbo. I mean, this is like right on the money.
It is.
Especially if you can get it like with a 6-speed.
Yep.
I mean.
2-door with a hatch.
Yeah, make it a 3-door. Holy, yeah, that'd be awesome. And you know, I could go without,
you know,
the tacky graphics,
you know,
and those silly rims.
What's weird is that this is supposedly like the high performance version, right? But it still has the traditional cruise grille. Doesn't have the RS grille or the RS cladding.
Isn't that the RS grille with the
it's not
the diamond type of deal
on the bottom. It is, well, that's how all the cruise grilles are. But then that's the lower portion, the lower fascia, also has that on the RS, and this one doesn't. Also, this one has the fog lights, but it doesn't have the RS fog lights, which have kind of like a chrome trim around them.
Yeah, it's kind of like a chrome bordering.
And but, you know, it's the, not like...
This has the worst like wheels ever on the Cruze, by the way. Like, these are the ugliest, besides the hubcaps, the ugliest wheels you can buy are on this car right here.
Yeah, they definitely kind of stick out like a sore thumb. I mean, the rest of the car, it's like it's half cool, half like, what's the word, forsaken.
Yes.
Yeah, but the only reason why they look bad is because of the size. I mean, you know, the design of those wheels are not that different from the design on my Camaro.
No, right. But they're just small. Yeah.
Yeah, they're small. But you know, this car, if you take the fake carbon fiber decals off the top of it.
No, wait, Hilton, hold on. No, those add 5 horsepower each. We can't do that.
Don't you know that the 1.6 doesn't do any horsepower? It's all about the graphics.
Okay. But, you know, you could take this car and make it look normal, you know? I mean...
Speaking of normal, what do you guys think of this yellow color? I'd sport that. What happened to all the fun colors in the Cruze range? Like, why isn't there a yellow like this?
Yeah, like or a green
or an orange.
It goes back to a three-door car. You know, you can get that three-door car coming, then you know I'm sure you're gonna get a lot of nice colors coming with it.
Yep.
You know, like a four-door, Cruze Synergy Green doesn't look that great, but I bet you a nice set of wheels on a three-door would look hot.
I think it depends on the Cruze. Like, the sedan, I think, in certain hues would look great.
My favorite Cruze that they've ever, shown off.
It's a Z-Spec with that orange one.
No, I prefer, actually, above that, I like the CS. That the one that they launched in Britain.
Oh, with the
white wheels.
Yeah.
I think that looks just badass. Yeah. And it's, like, that really nice blue.
By the way, speaking of the colors, you know, that whole Japanese, earthquake and the effect it had on the pigment plant has caused General Motors to search around for, other colors that can replace, the colors that they're no longer offering, which is the Imperial Blue Metallic.
And the black.
Pardon me?
And the black as well, the black metallic they're no longer offering.
Yeah, and the cyber gray metallic and the red jewel tint.
Right.
So they are coming out with replacement colors for those. There's going to be another gray coming out. There's going to be, I think we talked about the replacement color for the red jewel tint that's more of a candy apple color coming out.
Right.
And, I would be surprised if, there's not another navy blue of some sort coming out shortly. So, obviously it affects the Cruze because, cyber gray was one of the colors available for it. I think IBM was as well, right, Alex?
I think so.
A lot of vehicles, a lot of the product line is... unfortunately, has been affected with respect to what you can buy in color.
Right.
So I'll look for them in the next quarter. I think they'll start introducing.
Yeah, 2012s.
Yeah.
We're gonna see them in 2012s. Which, speaking of 2012s, I just saw the hubcap design of the 2012 LS Cruze LS.
Mm-hmm.
Looks better than the outgoing hubcap design, but. What's interesting that they're actually now giving real wheels to the 1LT and a 2LT instead of the hubcap. So now the 1LT gets the what used to be in 2011 the 2LT wheels.
Mm-hmm.
The 1LT is now getting those standard, and then the 2LT is getting what my wheel standard, which were the upgrade. So
good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So last note about this Bumblebee thing here. This is not. The performance version we've been waiting for. Of course, you're going to have cars like the Ford Focus ST that's going to make north of 250 horsepower.
I don't think it's going to be that high. It's going to be, isn't it going to be around there? Around 250, maybe.
North of 240, definitely.
Yeah, I think some say 247.
Okay. So You know, and that's, of course, torque vectoring and all that stuff.
Yeah, you get all-wheel drive in. It's a five-door. And I mean, just the whole shebang, ready to take on, like, the Subaru WRX.
Yeah. So this is not it, but it's one step closer. And, God, I hope they freaking do it. You know, I hope they bring this, the 1.6, and they replace the 1.4 with it, or at least offer it as an option all over the world. You know, I would have gotten that if it were up to me and if it were available. But, you know, again, it needs the coupe, it needs the hatch, and it also needs a more sporty model.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Well, you know, guys, it's like, it's we downplay the cruise a lot.
We do. Yeah, go ahead.
But it's still like the, I mean, it was the best selling car in America last year. That goes to show, like, it's one variant. And yeah, did I say last year?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, last month.
It was the best selling compact car.
One variant, two engine offerings.
One is not even an engine. Come on.
Yeah, the 1.8 is kind of
that's
ridiculous.
That's like a Flintstones buggy thing. Come on.
Well, same horsepower rating, just low torque.
Yes.
But it's just like. It's kind of baffling just how successful this car is, despite being so generic.
Yeah, but I mean, I see that, and I, you know, that's great, but it's not sustainable. You know, the Focus with its two variants is coming on strong, really strong. In fact, I guarantee you that it will surpass the Cruze in sales over the next 4 months. It has to, and it's I mean, it's already getting there. You know, the Cruze was number one, but not by that far. And, you know, at some point, you know, it's going to be unseated. So whether it's that happens, you know, by the hand of the Ford Focus, whether it happens by the hand of the Hyundai Elantra, which is getting a coupe variant in the next quarter or maybe two quarters as well, you know, it's just the fact that it needs to happen. So
yeah, there's a lot of different, like, there's a lot of cars companies out there that offer coupe variants to their compacts. Ford aside, because Ford, well, at least they offer a five door.
It's coming though.
Yeah, you think so?
It's coming. It's not. I think so. It's coming.
Two door or three door?
Two door. I don't know actually. Well, here's the thing: the Focus currently offers three actual variants. It offers the sedan, the hatch, and the wagon, everywhere except for the United States and North America.
Yeah, again, North America is playing catch up in the compact segment.
Right.
In terms of variety, they're obviously a higher quality here, but whatever. Sorry, Hilton, to keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, you know, well, I mean, sure, it is, you know, it's got, you know, it offers one platform right now, but, you know, when you look back at the most popular cars that are selling, it's the Toyota Corolla, which is, you know, pretty much one platform. The Honda Civic has multiple platforms, but, you know,
You mean variants?
Yeah, sorry. And you know, the Civic, actually, it has more available to people. But, you know, I see the Cruze as something that's great to work off of, that, you know, they could provide, you know, a two-door coupe, a three-door, even a five-door. And, you know, along with that diesel, come out with this 182 horsepower, let's say. You know, if, you know, the SS brand is going to be moved across the, you know, more than just used for the Camaro, you know, the 182 horsepower, maybe use the SS, and if there was a Z brand.
Yeah, I like Z-Spec, you know, better.
Well, yeah, but, if, you know, then they can use the Z-Spec as, you know, a 247 or 250 horsepower cruise.
Well, they could even, like, I don't know, instead of just calling it Z-Spec, they could be like Z and then a number. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, the Z24.
Sure, that would be perfect for this car, yeah. Because essentially this replaces Cavalier.
Z2.0?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter, but I'm just saying, like, the Z24 became an actual.
Right.
You know, yeah, it was.
Well, that was the RPO, and then it became an actual.
Well, that's exactly what happened with the Z28. I mean.
And the same thing with the Z06, I think, as well.
Yeah, then in 67 when the Z28 came out, the marketing didn't really look at it. You know, they just looked at, oh, there's an RPO number. You know, that sounds pretty catchy. Let's you know, in 67 you bought a Z28. There was no Z28 on the car at all. It was just called a Camaro, you know, with the sport package. And then marketing took a look at it and said, hey, let's run with it. And the same thing with Cavalier. They said, well, let's use the C24. Let's use the Z06. So
is that the same story with the ZR1?
Yes, it is. So the thing is, you know, it's a great opportunity here if they are going to put a high output engine in this cruise eventually, bring out the Z24 again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a Z-spec.
I like that. On that note, I think it's time to let these good people go and enjoy their day, their evening, their morning. You know, whatever time you're listening to this show is good for enjoying, right? As we do at the end of every show, we're going to welcome Bob Lutz to join us here next time on GM Authority Weekly. And we will also invite any and all GM employees who would like to participate, who would like to guest on the show. We're more than welcome. We're more than open. We'd love to have you. So let us know if you'd like to join us, and we'd love to have you. If you do like us, you can fan us on Facebook. If you hate us, you can keep that to yourself because we're trying to stay positive here.
I will fight you.
I will watch it and film that fight, and then that's going to be like a special segment on GM Authority.
I welcome any and all challengers.
Yeah, you're actually down your lean weight now, huh?
I'm getting there. I am getting there, but this running around and testing all these new cars that aren't coming out for a while is really starting to get to me.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
I bet.
Yep. It's
really cutting into my training time. Not that I mind.
It's really cutting into the training time as well as the patterned eating that you've established over the last few months. So.
Yeah. Yesterday I ate once outside of breakfast, and it was Qdoba.
Man, I'm gonna need to start sending you some like packed lunches. Like Billy Madison.
Nah, dude, it's cool.
Back to school.
I don't know. I was kind of, not to sound like a snob or anything, but I was kind of banking on them to have lunch.
Oh
right?
yeah, but no, huh?
Well, they had like fruit and snacks.
Hey, that's not bad.
Well, it is if you're trying to watch your sugar intake.
Oh, you're doing one of those.
I'm watching everything, man. This is no joke. Well, last time I weighed in, I was around like 191 pounds. I have to be around 180 pounds or so by mid-September.
It's all air weight, dude. You can just blow that out.
Yeah, with pill colon blow. That's what they call air weight over there, huh?
In any event, yeah. If you do like us, you can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can do all of that by searching for GM Authority on those respective networks, or by going to facebook.com/GM Authority or twitter.com/GM Authority as well. And we, of course, do appreciate your iTunes reviews. Keep those coming. We really like the feedback that we've been getting there, and we're going to work to improve that. And last but not least, you can find the show notes for this show at weekly.gmauthority.com. And you can also write into us, podcast@gmauthority.com is the address to do that. And of course, call us at 313-355-3GMA. And I think that's all the air weight that I've got today, because the general has been served. Please rate the show in the iTunes store. Head on over to iTunes and search for GM Authority Weekly. Is anyone